Folks, this is a wonderful honor to be here with you tonight, especially in this wonderful building, and to hear a little bit of its history ahead of time. I'm coming to speak about a subject tonight on the Shroud of Turin that may or may not be the burial garment of Jesus, but let me open like this. In both the Gospels of Luke and John, we're told that burial clothes were found in the tomb of Jesus while he was gone. I'll tell you the conclusion up front. I don't usually do this in this lecture, but I'll tell you, I'm not going to conclude that the shroud is the burial garment of Jesus. It may not be. I think there's some good considerations that say that it could very well be. But even if it's not, something you might want to keep in mind as you see this, it could be, as I said. But to keep in mind that this may be the closest we get to seeing what actual crucifixion is, because the person who's buried in the shroud, by all estimations, has been crucified and is dead. And he's been crucified in a manner just like Jesus was in the gospel. So with that idea, at the very least, we can learn about Jesus' death by crucifixion this evening. Okay. From time to time, the Turin Shroud has been on display, and it is in Turin, a city in northwestern Italy. And this is part, maybe the most important portion, of the cloth that's a little bit over 14 feet long, a little over 3.5 feet wide. And if you'd waited in line up to 8 hours to see this, the cloth wouldn't be this way, but it would be turned lengthwise. So the 14 feet would be like this, and about 3.5 feet wide. It would be in a case that, until recently, was bulletproof alone, but it was in the fire, at least the second fire that it's been involved in around the turn of this century. And so now the case is bulletproof and fireproof. Now you could have stood there and you could have your iPhones, and assuming they let you take photos, you could walk up and see that and say, I don't know, no offense, but I feel like I'm taking a psychological test, you know, when I look at that, because I'm just not sure what I'm looking at. And the most prominent things here are the two lines on each side and what look like, because they are, burn marks. This is from the 16th century fire, as you'll see from a painting in just a few moments. But because you've been in line for 8 hours and you got your camera and you don't want to go away with not having told your friends that you were actually there, you start taking some photos. And when you get home, you look at these, and that's what your film says. Here's what your eyes saw. Here's what the film says. And these are a couple of the first mysteries of the shroud. The cloth has a light darkness and left-right reversal. The shroud is a photographic image. This would be the positive, and this is the negative. But there are two images, and you're going to see here as we move forward, this is what the two images would look like. And, whoops, over here, this is the man's face. You saw this a moment ago, but it's up here on the negative. Here's the back of the head towards the bottom of the feet, back of the head to the bottom of the feet, face down to the top of the feet. So on the shroud turned this way, the top of the feet would be on one side and the bottom of the feet would be at this end, because the cloth wraps the body like this. When you open it up, it's looped over the top, so it's not the front and back of the head are not exactly near each other, because it loops. But this is the cloth, and the question is, are we potentially looking at the burial garment of Jesus Christ? And there's a close-up of the two face pictures. Again, the one over here would be the one you see with the naked eye, and over here would be what your camera sees. And notice, just to get a perspective here, notice this three-shaped blood stain on the forehead is backward, and the points that look very dark here, like the mustache and this is a blood stain in the beard. The beard actually goes down to here. But these are blood stains. Notice they're light over here. So left, right, and light darkness. This is actually the right side of the hair. It's over on the left side over here. This is a 16th century painting, like this church, 16th century. And the reason I show this is because you can see several things here. This is a good idea of how the man in the shroud was buried. And notice the angels holding up the shroud. Here's the image, front image, back image. So the point is, in a 16th century painting, you not only get an idea of how the man was buried, you can tell that the image was already on the cloth in the 16th century. It didn't come about in the 20th century, or it wasn't discovered in the 20th century, or something like that. Now immediately, someone's going to say, what about carbon 14? Wasn't the shroud disproven in 1988? Now, at the day this story broke, I was lecturing in England at actually at Oxford University, and we would lecture on alternative days and travel on the other days. And a student came up to me and said, "Did you hear the news? The shroud has been proven to be a fake." And now I knew the shroud had been tested. It was being tested at three laboratories in Switzerland, at Oxford, and in the state of Arizona, back in the States, at a state university. And they said, yes, the news just broke, the shroud's a fake. So we got into town that morning, into London, and here's the piles of papers all over. Front page, the shroud is a medieval object. So for years, I was privileged in 1981 to have co-authored a book on the shroud with one of the team members, the member of the Air Force Academy, a university in the United States, and there was a carpool with four men, four professors, and that's where the shroud testing took place from this group of scientists in 1978. And just 10 years later, 1988, we're told that the shroud dates in either the 13th or 14th century AD. Now, a lot of critiques have been made of this dating, but this is probably the most authoritative critique by Ray Rogers, who was the chief chemist for the team. And if anybody was to say, well, these are all Christians investigating this, so they're, you know, prejudiced or something like that, Ray Rogers starts this article I'm going to show you, and he says, "I don't want to talk about miracles. I hate miracles talk." We're not talking miracles. We're talking an archaeological artifact, and I want to know, is what they dated in 1988 the same as the cloth they dated in 1978? He said, "I'm not asking your opinion. I'm not asking your beliefs. I'm asking, what does modern science say? What does chemistry tell us?" He's a chemist. And he published a well-known article in a secular journal. You can see right here, that's the name on top, Thermochemica Acta, 2005. And he said, "Look, I'm not asking you your opinion. I'm talking science. You compare a thread under an electron microscope from 1978, because they had a thread. He's one of the scientists who did the testing. And they have a thread from the 1988 testing." He said, "Here's all I'm telling you. They are not the same cloth. They are not the same cloth." And he proceeded to tell the differences. He said, "Now, this is my opinion," but he said, "the date that they arrived at in 1988, between 1260 and 1390, with a probable confidence of 95%, this caused questions about the shroud. But what he says is this dating contradicted almost every other scientific find on the shroud, many of which you'll see here in these slides. And he said, but preliminary estimates were that this was a much older cloth, so we didn't understand what was going on. But as I said, he looked at the two cloths and he said, observations prove that the radiocarbon sample was not part of the original cloth of the Shroud of Turin. The radiocarbon date was thus not valid for determining the true age of the shroud. His estimate is the thread that was dated, and by the way, all three patches for the three universities, US, England, and Switzerland, all three patches were cut. They were divided from the same piece on the cloth. So what's true of one would presumably be true of all. And he said it's a different cloth. His guess is that what they dated was 60% original date, whatever the original date is for the shroud, and 40% medieval. That they got part of a patch, and that's going to skew the date. There's patches I've already showed you, patches all over the cloth. So this is one of the first major blows to carbon 14 being accurate, because as Ray Rogers says, these two cloths are either the same or they're not, and they are not chemically the same cloth. He said anybody who knows chemistry who can use an electron microscope can check this and confirm this. So beginning from the time of this article, which was published, as you can see, in 2005, and by the way, this is available online, I believe. From this time, folks started saying, well, you know, we've got to give some thought to this carbon 14. But let me share a second argument with you that'll take me a little bit of time to develop here. This is an art history argument. And on the left is the shroud image as it appears to the naked eye. And on the right is one of many paintings that were believed to be paintings of Jesus. And the artist is quite apparently copying off the Shroud of Turin. The shroud was on display many times. Many artists painted it. There are little tiny specks of paint on it. There's no paint, dye, or powder in the image area that can account for this image, but there's little tiny specks of paint, like you might get grease popping out of a pan if you're doing cooking on a stove. There's some paint. And the artist apparently thought he was painting Jesus. You say, well, how do you know? Or how do you know the artist here, if it's an artist, was not copying from this painting? Okay, let's take a look. The argument is that there's a lot of odd things on the shroud that cannot be explained if the shroud is copying off the paintings, but they can be explained if the paintings are copied off the shroud. And since these paintings are many centuries older than the 13th century, this may or may not be Jesus. That doesn't determine that this is Jesus' burial cloth, but it does tell us that this cloth, if this theory is true, this cloth cannot be 13th century. All right, so you can follow the argument here with me. Let's take a look at a few odd things on the shroud that an artist would have no excuse representing unless they were in fact reproducing this picture. For example, between the eyes of the man in the shroud is what appears to be a triangle, a much discussed triangle. Maybe it's a watermark. There's watermarks all over the cloth. It was doused in water when it caught on fire in the 16th century. It could be anything, but it doesn't really make any difference. There's a triangle here between the eyes. Why does this artist feel like he's got to put a triangle between this man's eyes? All right, here's another one. This looks like he's got a short cropped beard, and it looks like it's double peaked. And if you look right down the center, it's a little off center. It looks like the opening is a little off center. But in fact, you'll see this very clearly later, that the beard goes down to here where this double line is. The beard goes down to here. That is not the end of the beard. That is a blood stain. It makes it look like the end of the beard. The artist apparently thinks it's the end of the beard, paints the double peaked beard, has an opening, that's a little off center. But if this is in fact Jesus, according to the artist, if this is in fact Jesus, what do we do with these things down here in this double line? Well, you must add them to your picture, because if it's Jesus, we have to have it accurately depicted. And so he's got these lines kind of in space across the neck with, you know, no apparent reason for these things. The hair comes down the right side and it disappears behind the shoulder at a higher level while it drapes lower down the left side. Disappears behind the right shoulder, comes down lower on the left side. Abnormally large eyes, long slender nose, same characteristics. That is a mustache, but that's a blood stain. One of the reasons the nose looks abnormally long and slender is that's a blood stain at the bottom of the nose. But there's a lot of features here. There is a little swirl right here that is often portrayed as a little bit of hair coming down in the painting. Here's another one. Now, I'm not sure why there's white, somehow there's some white spots in the picture that aren't there, but this is the famous painting of Jesus in the Sinai Peninsula, south of Jerusalem, at St. Catherine's Monastery. And there are more than enough points of congruence to show that these two faces are the same. Now, this artist does not make the split in the beard there, but Jesus has a short beard and lines put down across the throat. It's hard to see here, but he's got a triangle between the eyes, the large eyes, the long thin nose, the hair goes behind on the right side, comes down on the left side, parted down the middle, combed down the same way, etc. But this piece of art in St. Catherine's Monastery is actually 6th century A.D. 6th century A.D., half the time between the cross and the carbon 14. So something's going on with this picture, which certainly appears to have been taken from the shroud, but it dates in the 500s as opposed to the earliest carbon 14 date of the late 1200s. This is one of several examples of Roman coinage. These are the first time that Jesus has been represented on a Roman coin. This is a very smaller than a lepton, which you're going to be able to see in a minute, a little like a widow's mite. And it's gold, very thin, and it portrays Jesus here with the cross behind. And if you look at the face, now there are several of these coins and different denominations of these Roman coins. They can still be purchased today. And these coins have anywhere between 75 and 200 points of congruence with the man's face in the Shroud of Turin. Now, in a court of law, at least in our country, if all anybody has for you is a high school picture and you're thought to have robbed a store, but they have a photo of you from the camera in the store and they compare the two photos, you need 40 to 70 points of congruence scientifically to conclude that these two faces are the same. 70 is the minimum for this coin, and as I said, it goes all the way up to about 200 points of congruence with the shroud face. Now here's the coin. Here's the shroud face. Now it's got a gold lighting behind it, so the idea is the same background as the coin. This is the overlay. This is the shroud laid on the coin. And one thing that I just find really interesting is the shroud has the same familiar double line going across the bottom of the beard. And the author puts the double line here at the bottom, two lines across the throat, underneath the short beard. Now, There's a number of other things, including the triangle and the hair. You can go down these characteristics for yourself. Hair behind the shoulder, hair in front of the shoulder. Same sorts of things. But to me, the real interesting ones are the triangle between the eyes, and why do you put lines across the throat out in space with no apparent reason for doing that? But these coins, there's several of them, as I said, both denominations and years, but these coins date between 690 and 702 AD. 690 and 702 AD. And again, the carbon dating from the shroud is supposed to be late 1200s. So if this coin is a depiction of this picture, the carbon dating does not work. So that's where I'm going with this argument. I'm not saying that's Jesus' burial garment, but I'm saying that this burial garment was most likely around centuries before the carbon 14 dating. So it's looking like Ray Rogers' article or some other argument is accurate. This is a close-up of the right eye of the man of the shroud. From this point on, I have a number of scientific photos. Most of my photos are from the 1978 scientific investigation. I will tell you there is some disagreement among the scientists as to what we're seeing here, but even before the testing of 1978, in 1976, there was a scientific enclave. The scientists got together and published a number of essays for what kind of tests they would like to perform on the shroud. And even in that 1976 book, which was edited, by the way, by my co-author, Ken Stevenson, they argued that on the right eye of the man, on both eyes, there are button-like objects put over the eyes, which they said look like coins from image enhancement. And in particular, they said it looks like some lettering can be seen around this right eye. First, let's take a look at a Jewish lepton. Here's an astrologer staff here, and here's some Greek lettering. Oh, this is starting to look like one of those psychological tests all over again. That may or may not be a staff. This is a lepton. The lettering is off the screen, but if this is the Roman coin they think it is, they're up to seven letters now. You can see some other squiggly things out here, but they're up to seven letters. But here's four. What look like, in English, in the Arabic alphabet, U-C-A-I. U-C-A-I. If that's what you're looking at the name in Greek for Tiberius Caesar. Okay, but here's the problem. If this is Tiberius Caesar, that is misspelled. That letter right there should be the Greek, well, it'd be transliterated as K and not C. And so some researchers said, aha, this must be a fake. Somebody can't even spell Tiberius Caesar's name, as if the Jews would care that they just misspelled the Roman emperor's name. But at any rate, they have now found a half dozen leptons. They've now found a half dozen of them with this same misspelling, with a C instead of a K. So you can see these coins with the misspelling, and you know what you're looking at if that's what this is. As I said, there's a difference of opinion. If that's what you're looking at, UCAI, Tiberius Caesar, lepton of Pontius, this is a lepton of Pontius Pilate, minted between 27 and 31 AD. So, you can just think about that. All right. I kind of like this picture the most because it typifies the scientific testing for me. Seated on the stool here is the scientist who may be most associated with the 78 shroud research. This is John Jackson, a theoretical physicist, a professor at a couple of American universities. Everybody in this picture is not American, but most of them are Americans from several scientific labs in the U.S. They're going over 1978. They're going over last-minute testing. Behind John is a table here, and you can see about the size of the shroud that later is wrapped around this crucified body. Now, probably the second best known figure in this investigation is another professor, science professor, named Eric Jumper. You can see Jumper across his name tag. This is Vern Miller. The scientists were a typical cross-section of the American population. Many of them were not Christians. There were a few Jews on the team. This man right here is a Mormon. His name is Vern Miller. He is a scientific photographer. And this is an Italian scientist over here. And they are taking the backing off the cloth. And for the first time, they're trying to answer the question, is there an image on the back of the cloth? They know, you could suspect, they know the blood is going to go all the way through because blood soaks into linen. But they want to know, is the image area on the back of the cloth? That's very important scientifically when you talk about a cause of the image. And I'll come back and you'll see a slide a little bit later that will answer that question. This is Sam Pellicori. He's another physicist. He's from the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California. I love this picture because you can see about when this is made. He's got, apparently they don't have any hair code at the research facility. And if you could see this picture better, Sam has a flower power shirt on. So you know it's a it's a signature 70s photo. And Sam's doing, by the way, he's an agnostic. So another example of a non-Christian on the team. He's doing microscopic work on the face area. You say, well, how would you know? Because you'll get used to seeing this, but these are the hands crossed in front. So the face is going to be about here. Here's the chest wound right here. That's a patch behind the pole. That's a patch. These are burn marks. And by the way, the burn marks are almost equal across the cloth, almost like paper doll cutouts, because the cloth was believed to have been folded in squares and kept in a cedar chest type container when it was burned in the 16th century. And when the molten pieces of silver came down, it landed on certain pieces of the cloth and burned them similarly in that spot all the way through. So when you open it, they're almost the same across from each other. All right, Kodak made some special sticky tape, and they're taking some samples off the feet of the man in the shroud. Now you can imagine, the feet are covered with blood, the bottoms of the feet are covered with blood, but there's also, quote unquote, dirt on the bottoms of the feet. Okay, well, an article has been published in another peer-reviewed secular chemical journal that argued that, well, that indicated that the dirt on the bottom of the feet here is limestone, but it is a species of limestone that is found only in the Jerusalem area in the world. So you start putting some things together here and you think, well, if somebody in the Middle Ages or back sometime between the 4th, 5th, 6th century in the Middle Ages, if they crucified some poor soul to look like Jesus and then wrapped him in this cloth, and that's the kind of quote-unquote artwork this is, if that's what happened, why would they do things, if you believe the coins, why would they travel to Israel, for example, to get elected of Pontius Pilate, when for philosophers there's a bit of an epistemic question, an epistemological question. Would they know a leptin of Pontius Pilate if they saw it? How would you know in the 6th or 10th or whatever century that what you had was a leptin of Pontius Pilate? And besides, why would you put it over the eyes to keep the eyelids shut and then put the cloth over top when nobody can see the coin anyway? And why do you have to have authentic dirt from Jerusalem on the bottoms of the feet? There's also pollens on the cloth. I don't have my pollen slide here tonight, but there's pollen on the cloth that's from prehistoric plants that are found almost entirely between Jerusalem and the Dead Sea. So you have to explain the pollens, the dirt here, and if you think there's coins, they all have to be explained. Here's some more scientific photos. This is an ultraviolet photo. You can see this is not good to see how the shroud is stretched out on that table. More tests. This is an enhanced photo. I think in the West in particular, the Western world. We have a very dainty view of crucifixion. We associate crucifixion with five major wounds, two in the hands or wrists, two in the feet, and one in the side, traditionally the right side. And we say, yep, that's what happened to people on the cross. But this is an enhanced photo. It's not the color of the shroud. Everything the same density as blood shows up red in this. So you can see the blood stain of the beard here. And you know this is an ancient wrinkle because the blood is following the wrinkle in the cloth. You're starting to see signs here that the beard goes down here. But this man is severely beaten. In fact, when the movie The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's movie, came out, I had heard in one of the reviews that he believed the shroud to be Jesus' burial garment, so he copied the beating off the shroud. And you're going to see in a few minutes when they were beating the Jesus figure in the movie, I knew he was going to have to flip over on his back because the man on the shroud is beaten on almost every inch of his body except for his face, his forearms, and his feet. Everything else is beaten. And you're going to be able to see that very clearly here in just a few moments. In this picture, he looks like a heavyweight prize fighter. His eyes are swollen, almost totally shut. Large contusions under both eyes, the blood coming down. He's been stabbed in the scalp with a series of sharp objects, and you're going to be able to see this even more clearly on the pictures I have in a moment on the back of his head. This is another enhanced photo, not the color of the shroud, but here everything red also shows up, everything bloody also shows up, the same density as blood shows up red. And you can see all these squiggly marks are beating marks. You can see the wound in the left wrist. The blood's all over the back of the hand. It's a V-shaped blood flow going up the arm. That's because the majority view by the many pathologists who studied the shroud, medical pathologists, that when you're on the cross, you try to worm your body into a state that frees the pressure on your lungs. Because when you hang down in this manner, in fact, in German experiments in Cologne, right after the Second World War. In German experiments, when men were hung, they were simply tied to 2x4s and hanging down. They lost consciousness in a maximum of 11 to 12 minutes just from hanging like that. And it's believed that the weight of the body pulls down on the intercostal, deltoid, and pectoral muscles, the same muscles you work out in a gym. They will constrict on the lungs so that you can inhale, but you are increasingly unable to exhale. So that's why they believe that there's a V-shaped blood flow going up there. Now, you can't see the hole in the right wrist, but you can, because it's covered by the left hand, but you can see the blood flow going up the arm. This is the side wound. Now, earlier, I showed you a picture of the scientist separating the cloth. And I asked the question, can we see the image on the back of the cloth? Now, once again, the red or the brownish red, the rust colored, is a blood stain. And it does go through the cloth. But the image area, let's just pick on this little fibril right here. This is a photomicrograph. This is a close-up of a thread. The thread could be made up of approximately 200 fibrils. The shroud image not only does not go through the back of the thread, it does not go through the back of the fibril. The shroud image is what is called superficial. Virtually, I'm just leaving room for error here. But there is, as far as I know, no contemporary cause of a superficial stain that would not even go through the back of 1/200th of a thread. And so not finding it on the back immediately ruled out a number of creative ways to create a shroud image. And this is why I said earlier, there's no paint dye. There's paint on the shroud, but it's specks. There's no paint dye or powder in the image area that could account for the image.